door to the 21st century. He's not the Word made flesh, but the triumph of Word over flesh. Obama is able to call us back to our highest selves, and that's just the start, my friends. Can you see how we're deceived? Make sure you get your copy of Seduction of the Saints. Don't delay. Get it today. And can I urge you to become a partner day after day? We're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our...
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Pastor David Whitney as we talk about the Constitution. Now, you can't understand any of the things that are going on today unless you understand what the Constitution says, and the Constitution is the law of our land. When the prospective jurist for the Supreme Court, Sotomayor, was interviewed recently by members of the Senate, she kept saying over and over again, it is the duty of the judge not to adjudicate the law, but to apply the law. But nobody ever asked her, what is the basis of the law that you are going to apply? Is it going to be international law, as you have said? The international law should supersede the Constitution. Is it the Constitution? Is it the laws that have been passed by judicial activists in the past? What is the law? Well, the law of our land, of course, is the Constitution of the United States. And the health care legislation that is being advocated today by President Obama is unconstitutional. The hate legislation is unconstitutional. The cap-and-trade bill is unconstitutional because the United States government, the federal government, has no authority in any of these fields. So why are they doing it? Why? Because they can get away with it because the public doesn't understand the Constitution, and our job, my job, Pastor David Whitney's job, is to teach you about the Constitution and get you to teach others, to get people to understand that America is not a democracy. Contrary to everything you've been taught in school, it's all been a lie. America is a republic, and if you don't know the difference between a republic and a democracy, you need to get a little pamphlet put out by Radio Liberty. We are a republic. But you also need to understand our Constitution. So with that as a background, Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution, thanks for being with us tonight.
Oh, good evening, Dr. Stan. It's great to be with you and your audience and be with people who care about our liberties that are secured by the Constitution. And you're absolutely right. It's amazing to hear the questions that are not asked. It's a deafening silence because the questions not being asked of potential judicial nominee here are actually indicative of the fact that those senators, they don't care about the Constitution, and they know that they're playing this charade, this game out here to trick enough of the American people to think that they're following the Constitution when they're doing nothing of the kind. And you've listed just a couple of things that are unconstitutional, and how do we know they're unconstitutional? Well, the quickest measure of whether an item is constitutional on the part, an action on the part of our federal government, is to turn to Article 1, Section 8. And I know we've dealt with this before, so let me just quickly go through that list of 18 things. If it's on the list of 18 things, then the federal government can do it. If it's off this list, that if it's not listed here, the federal government has no permission from we the people. You see, people need to remember that Government doesn't do whatever it chooses. It can only do that which we the people have granted it specific, delegated, enumerated powers to do. If we have not granted it the power to create a healthcare system that it controls, it has no power to do any such thing. We haven't granted it power to regulate our, you know, what happens in our homes and our consumption of energy. It has no power to do anything that we have not given it the power to do.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney. David, go ahead. Pick it up.
The first on the list, and we'll just run through this list of 18 because we've covered it before, but I think it's a good reminder. The first is to tax and spend for only three possible causes: payment of debts, common defense, general welfare. Again, general welfare meaning it is for everyone that is going to benefit, not any one group of people or any one group based on their geography or based on their age or any other category. It has to benefit everyone, which means there's very little that the government can do that actually benefits everyone. The second thing that they can do is borrow money. The third is regulate commerce with foreign nations, with Indian tribes, and among the several states. That's state-to-state kind of commerce, not state within a state on its own commerce. Fourthly, the Congress is charged with making rules for naturalization, how people become citizens, as well as for bankruptcy. Fifth, had to coin money and regulate the value of fixed weights and measures. That is coin money, not print money, which is what they're currently doing, which is completely unconstitutional, which brings us to the sixth one, that it is their job to punish counterfeiting. When people make fake money, they're to be punished. Well, today they're the ones doing all the counterfeiting, as Federal Reserve notes are backed neither by gold nor silver. Fiat currency is illegal. According to our Constitution, we never gave our federal government permission to make money out of thin air. Instead, they're supposed to be punishing anybody that does such a wicked thing because it's really a form of theft. The seventh on the list, to establish post offices, post roads. The eighth, to establish copyrights and patents so people can preserve and have their intellectual property protected. The ninth thing is to establish federal courts below the Supreme Court. The only court on the federal level required by our Constitution is the Supreme Court. Anything below that, the Congress itself structures and can defund and can cause to go out of existence. It can do whatever it likes to any of the other federal courts because they are under its power and its jurisdiction. And the tenth item is to define and punish piracies and felonies on the high seas and violations of the laws of nations. So anything that takes place on the ocean, this is the realm legally for Congress to make laws and to punish. 11th, to declare war. And only Congress can declare war, not the Supreme Court. They can never declare war, not the President. Only Congress, and Congress can never legally give its power to another branch of government to declare war, which is essentially what's taken place for the past 50 years now.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Pastor David Whitney was simply reading from Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, the enumerated powers, 18 of them, which are the things that Congress can do. And anything that is not specifically mentioned there is unconstitutional according to the 10th Amendment, which specifically states that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution or restricted by it to the states is then to be carried out by the states and or the people. And the whole idea was there were only certain specific things the federal government could do because our founding fathers knew that governments always want to expand, people always want to control other people, and so they put chains on the power of the government and the politicians and restricted their power so the people could be free. And as Thomas Jefferson said so well, "Speak not to me of confidence in men, but rather bind them down for mischief, with the change of the Constitution. He was concerned about the mischief done by what would be done by men to the populace if there were no chains on the politicians. Well, they've taken the chains off the politician. They're forging them for the public, and that we're headed towards a fascist dictatorship because you were never taught the Constitution in school. And that's why what David Whitney and the people of the Institute of the Constitution are doing, they have branches in every state in the Union, and you're never going to hear about this on regular radio or television because they don't want you to know there's a growing awareness of all across our nation that we have people in government who are subversives, who want to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, merge us into a world government, and create a socialist dictatorship here. Pick up the story there, David.
Well, as I said, the declaring war is only the power that Congress has, but they have another ability in declaring war. They could declare or grant letters of marque and reprisal. And these are specific, very limited grants of power to private individuals to go attack other private individuals. In other words, another nation having not attacked us, but pirates or terrorists. So an independent group having attacked us, the appropriate response when a non-governmental group has attacked us is to grant letters of marque and reprisal, which are very limited grants of power to private individuals to go after those that have attacked us. And that should have been the response. Actually, Ron Paul proposed that. That should have been a response to 9/11. And, of course, it was not because they were not interested in following the Constitution, but instead destroying it by expanding the power of our federal government.
They really wanted to go to war with Afghanistan. The plan for the attack on Afghanistan had been placed on President Bush's desk on the 10th of September. That's in Richard Clark's book. He tells how the plan for the attack on Afghanistan was there the day before of the September 11th attack. They were waiting for the attack to justify going to war. All we would have had to do was use the technique of marque and reprisal and certainly offered a large reward for people to go and capture Osama bin Laden or bring him back, as President Bush promised the American people, dead or alive. But words, of course, are simply used to conceal motives. President Bush never intended to capture or simply eliminate Osama bin Laden. We needed a boogeyman. He was the best boogeyman in the world. He even looks evil with that beard. And, well, of course, he'd been dead for a long time, everything we've been able to determine. But they've kept his vision alive so he could terrify little children, frightened in their beds because Osama bin Laden's going to come and take away your freedom. That's why we've got to take away your freedom first. Go right ahead.
And it's amazing. You know, the American people, by and large, bought the lie. They had no idea, because they don't know this aspect of the Constitution, that the appropriate response would have been letters of marque and reprisal, and instead of going to war in an undeclared war, and not even a war against any particular nation, a war on terror, which is what? It's a tactic of an enemy. It's not even a group of people. The 12th power is related to that, and that is to raise and support armies. This is a general term for non-naval forces of all sorts, and a two-year limitation was clearly placed on this, that every 2 years, a reauthorization of any funding for those armies had to be reinstated, which meant the congressman would stand for election during that two-year period, and the American people basically would get an opportunity to weigh in for or against the war by returning the congressman or firing the congressman as they chose in the election. In contrast with armies, which could only be raised for 2 years, no standing army ever desired or envisioned by our founders. In contrast, there would be a standing navy, because number 13 is to provide and maintain a navy, recognizing that's a more permanent force, much more difficult to bring a navy into existence at the snap of a finger. So only armies are to be raised. The navy is to be maintained in an ongoing way. And then the discipline of the military forces, number 14, the rules for those disciplines come from Congress, called the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And then 15, to provide for calling the militia into federal service to execute federal laws or to suppress insurrection or repel invasion. Those are the only three permissible uses of the state militias when they're federalized and they become the federal army.
And I think, David, it's a very important thing to point out that our founding fathers feared a standing army. They felt that a standing army could be used as a means by which a tyrant could control the American people. They feared a standing army, if we had one, would be used for foreign adventures and foreign attacks and foreign wars, because wars increase the power of the government and the people rally behind the government against a feigned or imagined enemy, and we could send our troops all over the world to create an empire. And the last thing our founding fathers wanted was an empire. They wanted a nation where men could be free. But unfortunately, there were other people at the time this nation was founded who really did want an American empire, and their wishes come to pass today with American troops stationed in over 130 nations throughout the world, with America spending more for our military machine than all the rest of the world combined. Go right ahead, David.
And to trace the history of the American Empire, indeed, the American Empire did not even begin to arise until a standing army was begun to be built, World War I and specifically World War II to follow that. Well, along those same lines, number 16 is to organize, arm, and discipline the militia. Congress controls the militia only when it's in federal service. All other times, when there's no declared war, the militia's under the authority of the states, directly under the authority of each governor of each of the 50 states. And the states actually have the right to appoint militia officers. With the exception of generals, all militia officers are appointed by the states and not by Congress, because the militia is in the control of the Congress, the control of the states. And the very important principle here is they recognize there was a need to bring a military force quickly to bear, and you had that by a militia which was not professional soldiers. These are people who had their own jobs, their own professions, and on certain days were called up for military training and would be available in a crisis, an emergency, but otherwise would go about their other occupations. They were not professional soldiers. And the control of this was in the hands of the governor, such that the federal government would only receive the ability to use the militias when they were properly federalized, and the governors would never release their militia to the federal government unless there was a proper declaration of war. Since World War II, the last time that Congress properly declared war, the federal governors have not prevented the federal government from taking the power of their state militia and abusing it and going to a war in an unconstitutional way again and again and again since World War II. So that's the function that deals with the military in Article 1, Section 8. And then there's two final things. Number 17 is that the area that the federal government has direct oversight is only District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., and other federal property listed as forts and magazines and arsenals and necessary dockyards. That is, things directly related to maintaining a navy or being able to quickly mobilize the militia into the federal army. Federal property is only those limited things. No national parks ever envisioned. National parks are completely illegal. No national forests or any of the other property that today the federal government owns hundreds and millions of acres of land illegally. And the states ought to take that land back from the federal government and say, no, Constitution doesn't permit you to own Yosemite National Park. That's the property of the people of the state of California. It is not federal property. And that's item number 17. The last item in the list of 18 is that Congress may do what is necessary and proper to carry out the foregoing powers. That is, only the 17 things listed before number 18, only those 17 things can Congress do what's necessary and proper to carry out those foregoing powers. Anything not on that list of 17, there is nothing that Congress can create legally to take action whatsoever. And this is a very limited list, Dr. Stan. It's not very expansive, and it doesn't, this doesn't allow it to change over time. The only change permissible is by the amendment process, as Article 5 of the Constitution provides for.
Well, I think the thing is that people are going to say, well, but we don't want to destroy Yosemite Park. It's so beautiful. And they're absolutely right. And the state of California could maintain Yosemite Park and maybe even make a little money by charging people sufficiently to go in there and maintain it. But they always want a justification for ever extension of the power of the federal government. This is all part of a long-range plan to bring about this authoritarian society in America, because there's always those who've wanted to establish a feudal society right here in America. Well, go right ahead, David.
So that's Article 1, Section 8, one of the most important aspects of our Constitution, because in a sense, there is the very clear limitation. We are granting our federal government.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. 1-800-730-9796, or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
And the right of habeas corpus under any circumstances. In other words, if you are arrested by the government, you have to be brought and charged, and you have to know what the charges against you are, and there should be a speedy trial. Pick the story up there.
And so the writ of habeas corpus, if it is filed and the government does not respond, that is, they do not give a specific law that you are accused of having violated, then they must set you free. They either charge you with having committed a crime that in violation of an actual law, a law that is legitimately on the books, and they either do that or they set you free. And only Congress is able to suspend this in time of war, in time of great emergency. No other branch of government is given any permission to deal with habeas corpus. The judiciary branch cannot suspend habeas corpus. The executive branch cannot do it. And yet, twice in the history of our country, the executive branch has done exactly that. In fact, if you look at the history of our country, Congress has never suspended habeas corpus, but the president has twice. President Lincoln, the 16th president, unjustly, unconstitutionally, illegally suspended habeas corpus in the war. I like to call it the war to prevent Southern independence, because the South was declaring independence from the rest of the country, and Lincoln said, not over your dead body, I'm going to kill you all rather than let you go independent. And he suspended habeas corpus. For example, the state legislature here in Maryland was arrested and thrown in prison by Mr. Lincoln without ever giving a charge, because they never committed any crime. Crime, according to Mr. Lincoln, was breathing the idea of secession, of joining the other states that had already seceded. And how dare they do such a thing? Well, he was in violation of the law and should have been impeached on the spot if there was a Congress that had a backbone and a Senate that should have removed him on the spot, charging him with high crimes and misdemeanors. How dare he violate the Constitution? The next president that did it, many, many years later, was our 43rd president, Bush II. He suspended habeas corpus, according to him, under the Military Commissions Act, because, when it's necessary, that according to him, that he can suspend it. And he suspends it by saying, we declare you an enemy combatant. That is, they can take an American citizen, say, this American citizen, we declare to be an enemy combatant. He has no rights under the Constitution whatsoever. What? How could this happen? And yet that is exactly what the 43rd president declared, and of course the 44th president has done nothing about stopping this illegal and unconstitutional action on the part of our federal government. So that's the second thing they cannot do. The third thing is that the Congress cannot pass bills of attainder. A bill of attainder is when the legislative branch would find guilt and assign guilt through that legislative process. So it would be the legislature acting as if it were a court, other than the cases of impeachment where they do act as a court, but acting as a court for not impeachment type cases. And the only people that can be impeached are federal officials. So if they were to take an individual like you or I, who are not an elected official or appointed official on the federal level, and they were to basically take us through a court scenario as Congress, they cannot do that. They cannot pass bills of attainder. The second thing they cannot do under this Clause 3 is they cannot pass ex post facto law. That is a law which punishes a person for an act that was legal when the person did that action, and then the law was passed and said, no, that's illegal now, and we're going to make it retroactive. Well, no, they cannot make it retroactive. That's making an ex post facto law. In that same category, it means they cannot raise the status of an offense. If an offense was a misdemeanor to begin with, and you supposedly committed this offense, they cannot change its status and say, well, no, that's no longer a misdemeanor. That's a felony, and we're going to make it retroactive. It doesn't matter the time which you committed this. We're going to charge you as if it was a felony when you committed it. And this is also that they cannot increase the penalty for an offense in retroactive fashion, nor can they make it easier to convict a person. That is, they change the rules of evidence and make it retroactive. Because it's patently unfair. If a law exists and you violate that law, at the time you violate that law, that's the law you have violated, not some law made in the future that they would like to make retroactive. Congress is not permitted to do any such unjust and wicked thing.
Well, unfortunately, they always find means of getting around this, so they can, you know, they can put you in double jeopardy by trying you first under state law and then under federal law and then trying you over and over again until they convict you. The government always wants to find means around the restrictions placed by the Constitution. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Pastor David Whitney. So you pick up the story from there, David.
Okay, in section Article 1, Section 9, the fourth item on the list there is that Congress can not engage in direct taxation, that is, capitation tax, and the term may be a little unfamiliar to you, but most people know what decapitation is. That's taking off someone's head. So a capitation tax is a tax upon the head directly upon the individual citizen. Congress cannot make direct taxes, capitation taxes, according to Article 1, Section 9. Instead, the taxes must be in proportion to the census. That is, when the census is taken every 10 years, a structure is made by which each state is going to pay to the federal government its portion of the federal tax based upon the census in that state. So let's say, for example, the state of Maryland, I think is about 5 million people, and let's say the state of California, I'm just picking a number out of the air because I'm not exactly familiar, but let's say that it's 50 million, which not, no doubt, but say it's 50 million. So it's 10 times the size of the state of Maryland. Well, the tax bill paid by the state of California would be 10 times larger than the tax bill paid by the state of Maryland. The structure of our government and the structure of the taxing system was that states paid any taxation that was going to go from the people to the federal government. It was never directly the federal government taxing the individual citizens, as the IRS does today. That is a violation of this principle here in our Constitution. And many people say, well, wait a minute, David, that was all changed with the 16th Amendment. Well, that was changed only for corporations, not for individuals. The 16th Amendment was originally designed to tax corporations, not individuals. In fact, the Supreme Court, shortly after the ratification of the 16th Amendment, which there is some good question as to whether it was legitimately ratified. You can read Bill Benson's excellent work on this called The Law That Never Was.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment, of course. So Pastor Whitney's talking about one of the restrictions placed on the federal government was we could never have a federal income tax. They did not want the government to be able to tax the individual because they knew that would give the government the ability to monitor and control the individual and to target individuals who might speak out against what the government was doing. So the income tax is specifically prohibited in the Constitution. Well, before we go on, David, I want you to get out your telephone number. I want you to get the address and email for the Institute of the Constitution so the people, if they really care about America, and they would like to begin actually teaching others about the Constitution so they would know how to get hold of you and on the Institute.
Yes, Dr. Stan, thank you so much. One of the key things that every citizen can do, and again, many people wring their hands and say, oh, it's hopeless, there's nothing. Yes, you can do a very specific thing that will make a very direct impact in returning and restoring our constitutional republic, and that is to get an Institute on the Constitution host kit, which contains video lectures by constitutional law professor John Eidsmo, and two lectures by David Barton, a student manual, a host manual. Everything you need to conduct a class is in the host kit so that you can communicate with your fellow citizens these exact things we're talking about here of Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, the entire Constitution, study of the Bill of Rights and the subsequent amendments, the study of the Declaration, the essential tools you need to hold your government accountable to the standard of our constitutional law. And anyone can do this. You really don't need any background or experience in law or history. You just need a love for your country and a desire to restore the republic. People can order this by going online, and our web store is iotconline.com. Stands for Institute on the Constitution, iotconline.com. And actually, at the very top of the page, you can click the button there to order a host kit. We now offer this course online. People can, with broadband access, they can watch the videos and take the test. And that button right there at the very top of the page as well, and the first page comes up at iotconline.com. You can say, I want to take the online course. And there's a small charge, $30, for taking the online course. But we encourage people to get a host kit because it's best to take a group of people through this course together. As you can interact with each other, you can think about the news, what you just read in the paper that morning, and how it relates to what you're studying as to the structure our founders established. So those are both available. If you want to call us toll-free, we're on the East Coast, so during regular business hours on the East Coast, our toll-free number is 866-730-9796. That toll-free number, again, for Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. Dr. Stan, we had a great time this week graduating a class in the northern part of Maryland, people who came out as a result of tea parties. I've spoken at a tea party on April 15th and another tea party on July 4th, and people are upset about taxes, and they need to know that the reason they should be upset is the federal government is violating the very structure that the Constitution established regarding taxation. And just as we were talking to here, that the original structure was that the states received a bill to pay the federal tax. Now, how the state chose to raise those funds from their own citizens to pay that tax, that was completely up to the state. The state could have an income tax or excise tax or a sales tax or however the state decided. Each state individually decided how to raise the money. So rather than having a federal bureaucracy, an IRS, to come after you, you would have your own state, which is far more responsive to you as a citizen, far more accountable to you as a citizen than anything like the IRS. The IRS isn't accountable to anybody, basically. Supposedly it's accountable to Congress, but that doesn't work very well, as history shows very, very clearly. And the 16th Amendment did not change this. It was still to be the states paying the bill. What really changed was when states lost control over Congress when the 17th Amendment took place. That is, the Senate was no longer appointed by the state legislature. Because, you see, if the state legislature was actually going to have to raise this money from their own citizens to pay the federal tax bill, they had better have a big say in whatever spending the federal government did. That's why the 17th Amendment was a terrible disaster. It took away the power of the state legislatures to stop federal spending and prevent the federal government from spending money was going to be beyond what the states were willing to raise. Now, people say, David, don't that mean you want us to be part of the movement of resisting the IRS and do? No, I don't encourage people to do that. The reason being, we have got to take back the whole picture, not just this one issue, not just the 16th Amendment. We have to restore the entire Constitution, the entire structure, and if we were just to focus on this one area, you're going to have a lot of problems. You'd probably go to jail. The IRS is likely to do that. We can only rein the tyrant in if we deal with the whole realm of his tyranny, his violation of the entire Constitution. And that takes training millions of Americans, which is why I'm involved in Institute on the Constitution. I got involved because I recognize until we train millions of Americans, we cannot restore our republic. We cannot get back to the limited government designed by our founders. And the fact that they get away with this is because most Americans have no idea that Article 1, Section 9 says no capitation tax ever. That means the federal government can never tax you directly in a constitutional fashion. And the reason they get away with it is that most Americans don't know this. Most Americans haven't raised up a group of their neighbors who understand this, who will storm the halls, basically, of Congress and say, you have got to stop the IRS. It's illegal. You've got to stop doing this. You've got to restore the structure originally intended and designed in our Constitution. Well, that's number four on the restrictions of Article 1, Section 9. Number five deals with taxes as well, that no tax or duty may be no tax or duty on items exported from a state. One of the problems that existed under the Articles of Confederation is states were treating each other like foreign countries. So if you produced a widget in the state of Maryland and you decided you're going to sell it in the state of Virginia, when you crossed that state line and the state of Virginia charged you an import tax, you're importing into our state, you're going to have to pay an import fee to sell that item in this state. Well, this forbids that activity, no tax or duty on any imported items from one state to another. States had to treat each other as equals, and they could not tax the importation of goods from one state to another. And then related to that is that there would be no preference for local ships or ports over others. That is, if you had a port in Maryland versus a port in Massachusetts or a port in New York, there would be no favoritism in how a taxing structure was set up. And by the way, the federal government ran on import taxes exclusively for the first about 100 years. The only exception would have been, again, that egregious and unconstitutional war to prevent Southern independence. The federal government was very small. The federal government did not require a large financial ability because it had very, very limited functions. In fact, there were times when the federal government actually ran a surplus. Can you imagine that? The federal government had too much money in the treasury, and so they were giving back money to the states because they were not supposed to keep any extra money. The whole purpose of the federal government was not to tax the people to death like it seems to be now, but rather it was to have very limited functions, and those limited functions were amply funded simply by import taxes. But there was to be a fair import tax. So the taxes paid on goods that came into the port of Baltimore would be the same as the port of New York or the port Los Angeles. Any port had to have the same import taxing structure across the country. No favoritism from one port to another. And then seventhly, a restriction was that no money drawn from the Treasury could take place except by a specific appropriation of Congress. And there would be a regular public accounting of that. And oh my, this has violated so many ways. For example, all the Social Security money that has been spent already. There's no Social Security trust fund. There's no money anywhere. It's just filled with IOUs because the federal government spent it all. And of course, worse than that is inflation. As they debase the currency, in a sense, they are truly spending our money in an underhanded and unlawful fashion because there is no regular public accounting for it at all. It's merely theft and illegal according to our Constitution. And then finally, Article 1, Section 9, a limitation on congressional authority says that no title of nobility would be permissible. This is kind of strange in our thinking. Well, what's all that about? Well, you need to understand, in Europe, titles of nobility granted you special rights over other people in the society. That is, there was a class system by which the upper class had special privileges granted to them based upon these titles of nobility. So maybe they got a special tax break. Maybe they got special favors for their business and so on. Maybe they got special granted monopolies, and this was actually one of the things that led to our war for independence from Great Britain. The kind of special monopolies that were granted to prevent our colonies from trading with anyone they chose. No, we're going to force you to trade with these set groups that would obviously favor them economically over others. And today, you would say there is a nobility in America. Anybody elected to Congress, anybody elected to the Senate, anybody elected to the President, they have a lifetime nobility. They are not under the laws that you and I are under. In other words, they pass a law, they exempt themselves from having to obey this law that they just passed. They say they're exempt, but you have to submit to it. What kind of tyranny is this? The king gets a separate set of rules for himself. Well, that's exactly what Congress does all the time. Exactly what the President is doing in the Supreme Court and so on. They exempt themselves, but they put us peons under their thumb, under their wicked legislation. And so this idea of no title of nobility is very important because it is something that is being violated today, even if it's not in name. And, of course, there are people who've accepted, Schwarzkopf accepted a title of nobility as a knight from England. What's the general of our army receiving a title of nobility from the British royalty? What's all that about? Well, influence. British royalty wants to have some influence over him that our founders knew that was illegitimate. You cannot permit foreign powers to have undue influence over anyone in our federal government. So titles of nobility were forbidden, and they're a violation of that today. Well, moving on to Article 1, Section 10, we've talked about Article 1, Section 9 dealing with the limitations on Congress. Article 1, Section 10 deals with the limitations on state authority. These are the things that states may not do. They may not enter treaties, make alliances or confederations with other countries. They cannot themselves grant letters of marque and reprisal. Only the Congress can do that. They cannot issue money, paper, or coin. This was one of the problems that happened under the Articles of Confederation. States were issuing their own currency, fiat currency, something backed by nothing, which is what the federal government does today, and that was a huge problem. And they said, no, the federal government, only Congress, can coin money, and no states are permitted to do that under our Constitution. They cannot pass bills of attainder, which we talked about already. That's the legislature getting involved in a judicial action against an individual citizen. Cannot do that. They cannot pass ex post facto law. That is, a law that's retroactive. Not permitted to do that. They cannot pass laws impairing the obligation of contract. That is, if you form a contract with another person, say to buy their house or to have a mortgage with them or any such thing, that the framers believed that right to make a contract with another individual was a God-given right, is a sacred right that was not to be interfered with by any government whatsoever. And that right was recognized and honored until the wicked Supreme Court installed by FDR began to change a whole bunch of things. And one of the things they did was this. In a case that was called Home Building and Loans Association v. Blaisdell in 1934, the state had put on a moratorium on mortgage foreclosures, saying you can't foreclose, we're in this Great Depression and so on, you just can't foreclose on people's property. It's emergency circumstances. And, well, the Home Building and Loan Association said, of course we can, we have a contract. This person's not fulfilling their contract. Here's the terms when they don't fulfill their contract. Here's what happens. And ultimately it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, oh, no, in times of emergency, the government can suspend the rights of contract. Again, a violation of a very, very important principle that our founders put into law here. So the court effectively has written unreasonably into this clause. You may not unreasonably impair the obligation of contract. And who defines unreasonable? The Supreme Court. And so basically you could say today, they've given the state authority to interfere with private business relations in any respect whatsoever. And this is a dangerous thing when the government is involved interfering with the private contracts entered into freely by individuals. The government then becomes the tyrant. Well, the next item on the list that the states may not do is grant titles of nobility. So the state can't say we're going to have a knighthood and we're going to grant a title of nobility to somebody in their state. They cannot create a two-tiered system by which some citizens have special privileges granted to them above other citizens. Another whole category of things states cannot do, they may not, without the consent of Congress, tax imports and exports. That is, they cannot create their own import-export system of taxation unless Congress permits them to do so. And generally, Congress, of course, has not permitted them to do that, other than in the very area of funding the necessary functions of inspections at port facilities. So to fund inspections, they've allowed that that to be funded by imports, and that's permissible because states cannot do it on their own, but Congress can permit them to tax imports for such purposes. And then finally, states may not, without the consent of Congress, levy a duty of tonnage on ships, and the equal competition being there. They cannot keep troops or ships in peacetime. It's not for them to have a standing army, just as it's not for the federal government to have a standing army. And, of course, they cannot make agreements with other states outside of this Constitution. They cannot create their own system outside the Constitution as our form of government is structured.
Well, this Constitution was an amazing, amazing document. It's very short, very concise. Certainly, a lot of the legislation, the cap and trade bill, was 1,000 pages. Nobody could ever read it. Not possible to read it and understand it. The Constitution, very simple, can fit on one large sheet of paper. And we ought to read it, we ought to treasure it, because it is the only source that secures our freedom. Well, you go right ahead, David.
And then that final limitation on state authority in Article 1, Section 10, is that states may not make war, and that if there is an imminent danger and the...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Institution and set up a study unit in your own community. If you really want to understand the background of America, why we have the freedom documents are put together by Pastor Chuck Baldwin. They're everything from the Mayflower Compact right up until the Gettysburg Address. I think there are about 40 of the documents, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, certainly the great speeches that were given during that era. Vitally important information, the Freedom Documents, is available from Radio Liberty. Certainly the book, America's God and Country, by William Federer, is must reading for anyone who wants to know the Christian foundation of this country. Now, at the same time that the Christians were founding a great and noble Christian nation, there were occultists here. Wicked and evil people were part of secret societies dedicated to using America to become the new Atlantis, to bring about this world government. And you can't understand what's really going on today unless you understand the ancient plan of the secret societies. This is beautifully laid out in a series of DVDs called the Secret Mystery Series. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, and The Eye of the Phoenix. You can get those DVDs together or separately. Get them together. Why, of course, it's a discount, but you need, of course, to have this information to understand the fact that there really are secret societies. This is well covered in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which if you have not read, you should. There's a tremendous increase in interest in the book right now. We are putting out a large numbers of them. We may even have to get the book reprinted, although it has been reprinted by our good friend Tom Horn. Under any circumstances, why, we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to getting my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or listening to the talk. You get the DVD, or you can get it on CD, or you can certainly watch it for nothing up on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com. You get our talk on the forbidden secret, because there is a secret that has been passed down for 5,000 years. And never until very recently was this ever publicly discussed. And there's a syllabus that goes with the talk on the forbidden secret. You need to get my talk on the financial Armageddon and the syllabus that goes with that. You need to have the information at your fingertips, and you need to help us get the truth out across America. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. RadioLiberty.com. Now, we're moving into a period of crisis that's unparalleled in the history of our nation in modern times. If you have not laid in a supply of long-term storage food, why, we do work with Ready Reserve food, and if you'd like a catalog, we'd be glad to send it to you. You need a means of purifying or water so that you can drink it. And, of course, that's why you need a Berkey water filter. You need to lay in a supply of the health products that you would need if there really was a real epidemic. The H1N1 virus is a very mild virus. I mean, the entire world why only about 421 people as of the 6th of this month have actually died of the virus. They claim they're all the cases, and there probably are. Probably most people have actually contracted the disease, but it's so mild they don't realize it. But they're preparing a vaccine for this. What's in the vaccine? We don't know, and they're not going to tell us, and they're going to try to give it to everybody later this year. And ladies and gentlemen, do not take an experimental vaccine, because, of course, it could change your life and the life of those you love forever. So let me suggest that you get our material, you go to our website, and then we ask you to pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Chris Newby. That's Chris Newby, and we're going to be talking about Lyme disease. And, of course, you cannot understand so many of the chronic diseases that are out here unless you understand that Lyme is a very specific disease, although it tends in many ways to overlap with the chronic fatigue disease and fibromyalgia and the Gulf War illness and a series of chronic infections that are disabling literally millions of Americans. And the tragedy is there's been an intentional effort to conceal the truth from the physicians of America, who really do not understand these diseases and how they interlock, do not know how to diagnose them, and do not know how to treat them. They all appeared, at least the first three diseases, Lyme, chronic fatigue, and fibromyalgia, appeared in the 70 period of the late 1970s. Of course, the Gulf War illness occurred about a decade later, 1991, somewhere in there. But, of course, we know the first cases of Lyme disease were found in Lyme, Connecticut, right across the inlet from a place called Plum Island, where the government was operating a biological warfare laboratory experimenting with all sorts of new insect and borne diseases. And suddenly, why children and young people in Lyme, Connecticut were coming down with arthritic conditions and illnesses. And eventually it was traced back to a Borrelia. It's a type of spirochete that's carried by a deer tick. Well, of course, it was very well localized at that time. It could have been contained by the use of DDT, but that didn't happen. And the deer tick now and other insects have been infected. This disease is spread all across America. And there's estimated somewhere between 1 and 2 million Americans are inflicted with this disease, which tends to overlap with the other diseases. And, well, Chris heads a support group in our area on this subject, and she knows a great deal more about this than I do. Chris, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. It sounds like you know a lot about Lyme already.
Well, I want you to just tell us how you got involved, what you've learned about Lyme disease, what the groups are doing, of course, why you have to have support groups, why you just don't go to the doctor and get it treated, and we'll have a good time. But you tell, give the background of who are you and why did you you get involved in this subject?
Well, I'm a senior producer of the documentary Under Our Skin, which is a feature-length film about Lyme disease, everything about it. And the way I got interested in it is in 2002, my family went to Martha's Vineyard for a vacation, and we came back to California, and 2 weeks after the vacation, my husband and I got sick, sicker than we'd ever been before. We were both 42, very athletic, and we were amazingly sick with flu-like symptoms with neurological involvement. For example, I couldn't read the signs on the freeway from a car. My eyes were so blurry, and I had to crawl on hands and knees to get up to the second story of my house. And so after 2 weeks, we said, well, we're just going to go and see a doctor. And we went and saw a doctor and said, hey, you know, we just came back from Martha's Vineyard. We know Lyme's a huge problem there. And we tested for Lyme, and they go, no, it's really rare. We think you just have a virus go away. And so we came back in 2 weeks, and we were still sick, and they said, no, it's the second virus, go away. And so it went on like that for a year, 10 doctors, $60,000 in tests, and finally we got to Stanford, and they tested us for Lyme, and it was positive for
me. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess Chris Newby, we're talking about her and her husband's experience, and their experience is not unusual at all. And this is not to say that the doctors aren't trying. They just don't know how ready to run the test for this disease. And, of course, 10 doctors, $60,000 later, a year of incapacity, and finally they went to Stanford. Now, did they do a special type of test for the Lyme disease rather than the one that is so commonly used?
They did the frontline test, which is called the ELISA, and then if that's a positive, they're supposed to do a second, more sensitive test called the Western blot. So the ELISA is actually not a very sensitive test. It misses well over half the cases, but I happened to test positive for it twice. And after I tested positive twice, they said, oh, it couldn't possibly be Lyme because it's so rare, and they fired us as patients. And at that point,
how long ago was this that this happened?
That was in 2003.
All right, go ahead.
So that was sort of puzzling because, you know, they ran $60,000 worth of tests, you know, syphilis, AIDS, MRIs, and those were all negatives, but we get one positive test, and then they say it's not Lyme. So we went to, you know, we had no answers, so we went to the Internet and found a Lyme doctor, and they started treating us for Lyme with heavy-duty antibiotics, and we got better for the first time in a year. And the road to recovery is pretty long, but after about a year, I said, well, this is really weird, because what mainstream academic medicine says Lyme is completely different than what we experienced in other patients, because, you know, we went to a support group and heard that we were the lucky ones because we got treated within a year, and many people had gone 5-10 years before they figured out what they had. And so that's what the genesis of the film was. And so I teamed up with a very talented filmmaker in Sausalito. And, you know, 4 years later, we came out with our film, and it's just been sort of an amazing journey.
Well, it is a tragic story, but I think we can multiply this a million times over because there's so many sufferers from this disease. And of course, the medical profession has been misinformed, and I believe it's not accidental. I believe it's intentional. Is your film available on DVD? Is it only available being showing in theaters now?
In theaters for the summer, and then in the fall we will release it on DVD, and it'll probably be available through Netflix, and then also you'll be able to hold your own community screenings in your neighborhood.
All right, fine. It sounds like something that we would like to carry so we can get it out across America. When it becomes available on DVD, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, of course, Chris tells the story of after the Stanford University found that she was ELISA positive for Lyme disease. They said, well, it's so rare, though, that there's nothing to worry about, and you couldn't have it, and they discharged her. So then they began going to Lyme support groups, and they eventually found a doctor. And we will not put the doctor's name out, because doctors who treat this disease come under tremendous pressure. Why? Why would a doctor who's trying to help people come under pressure? Well, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that this is one of the greatest cover-ups, the story of Lyme disease, the cover-ups of all time. How many people out there do you think actually have the disease, Chris?
Well, the CDC says officially about 30,000, but in the fine print, their epidemiologists say that's an underestimate by about 10 times, so really about 300,000 a year, which is about...
About 300,000 a year. Now, but what we're talking about, this has been around for 20 years, 30 years.
Right, and even the conservative academics say that 15 to 20% of the people who get Lyme go on to get the chronic form of the disease, so the estimates that I've heard, and I don't know how reliable they are, maybe 2 million people have the chronic form of the disease.
And this is about what I believe. And, of course, remember, I'm just an amateur, but I've talked to a lot of people about this and read as much as I can find on the Internet. Here's a disease. 2 million people have it in America, about, what, two-thirds of a percent of our population. And yet, of course, most doctors don't know. Now, eventually, Kim actually found a Lyme literate doctor, and through the support group they went to, and she and her husband got onto antibiotics. And how long did it take you to get better?
It took, you know, I'm not 100%, but I'm totally functional and a working adult now. So it took me, like, about 5 years, and it took my husband 2 to 3 years. He didn't have it as badly as I did.
All right, fine. And, of course, once you get chronic Lyme disease, I mean, you've got to be under antibiotic treatment. You've got to do all these things to try to build up your immune system, you know, and then, of course, counter out the effect of the antibiotics. But this many times is sometimes you just have to be placed on antibiotics as trial therapy. And, of course, high government officials say, oh, you shouldn't be using antibiotics. They're used too much. There are people who do not want this disease treated, and this is very, very similar to the story you'll get from the people with the chronic fatigue. And there you got another, couple of million people with chronic fatigue syndrome. Some of them are doctors I personally know who got it to getting blood transfusions. Why don't you tell us everything you know about Lyme disease? Because obviously you put together a movie. It's called, what is it, Under Your Skin?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why don't you tell our listeners everything that you can tell them about the signs, the symptoms, and what you know about treatment?
Well, it's most commonly transmitted from a tick, and the tick that mostly transmitted is a nymph tick, and it's the size of a poppy seed, so you might not see it, especially if it hides out in your, you know, under your hair or in some unseeable body crevice. Usually the tick has to be attached for a day or two to transmit it, but I've known children who have veins close to the skin to get it as quickly as an hour or two. The symptoms are usually some people get a rash. I hear 20% get a rash. Some people say 80% get a rash, but, you know, if you get a rash on your backside, you might not ever see it, or under your hairline, which was the case with me. But then a week to 2 weeks later, you'll get flu-like symptoms, which, you know, might be hard to distinguish from a regular flu, but if you get it in the summer and nobody else in your house has it, you might be suspicious, and you would definitely want to look for any kind of tick or rash. The best thing to do is treat it very quickly with antibiotics, and the doctors will fight you on that, but, you know, if a member of my family got bitten, I would put them on antibiotics immediately, because it's not just Lyme that's a problem. It's just Lyme with any of the other co-infections that come along with Lyme, which could be Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Babesia, which is like malaria, it's a red blood cell infection, Ehrlichiosis, which is a rickettsial disease that gets inside your cells, and any number of other, including Mycoplasma, which some people believe causes Gulf War syndrome. And many people, you know, they get past that flu-like stage, and then they'll have waxing and waning symptoms, and it'll get worse and worse. And they'll all of a sudden have neurological problems, and maybe 4 months into it, arthritis will flare up. And like my husband and I, after a year of untreated Lyme, we would get lost in our own neighborhood. I personally was a writer, and I couldn't read anymore because I would read a paragraph, and I'd forget that paragraph. And I couldn't listen to music anymore. I couldn't go into a restaurant and distinguish a conversation in front of me versus one across the room. So other people get MS-like symptoms or Parkinson's, vibrating, ALS, fibromyalgia, panic attacks. It's primarily a neurological infection, not a rash. So it, wherever it invades your nervous system, it causes different symptoms. So that's why one of the reasons it's so hard to diagnose.
And it really is hard to diagnose, isn't it? Because it sounds like so many different things, and people come into the doctor's office, and you know, they're tired all the time. They can't get anything done. And the doctor thinks, well, obviously this is a person with some severe neurological problems, some severe emotional problems. We'll just give them something to suddenly make them feel better, give them a little Elevel or something to stimulate them, or just give them a pill of some sort. And because the symptoms are so nonspecific. But certainly some of these people really, of course, have terrible neurological problems. And certainly, as Chris is saying, she just couldn't think. She'd get confused. She'd get lost. And you were a relatively young individual when this thing hit you. It must have been terribly disconcerting, especially when she got to the doctors, and they insisted there was nothing wrong with you.
Right. They told us eventually that my husband and I, even though we were perfectly healthy and we got sick on the same day, you know, 10 months into it, they told us, well, you just have a psychosomatic couples thing, you know, and you guys should go get therapy. So, and you know, I think when we started the filming, we went back to Reston, Virginia, and we went to a Lyme conference and sat in a dark conference room and listened to 60 Lyme patients back to back, and that was our first long filming session, and we just couldn't believe it. After that session, we said, we have an amazing story here. Because before, I thought we'd do like a Nova show about how elegant this germ is and how clever it is, but nobody could agree what it is. But after listening to 60 patient stories, we were just amazed. Almost everyone was told they were crazy. Almost everyone had considered suicide. The symptoms were so bad. And the misdiagnoses were just amazing. The, you know, you have ALS, you have MS, you have chronic fatigue, you have fibromyalgia, you have hypochondria. And we knew this was like a huge epidemic and an untold story. So it's just been, before I was drinking the purple Kool-Aid about our medical system. Oh, we have the best medical system in the world, you know, but until you get sick and you realize how the current medical system has blinders about certain diseases.
Well, but this is because of the government interference. There's an active, organized program on the part of the Centers for Disease Control to conceal the truth about this, and certainly a government medical system is not going to make it any better. We're going to have to educate the doctors, and the tragedy is they mean well, but they believe what the medical organizations tell them, they believe what the CDC tells them, they believe what the National Institute of Health tells them. And there's some people there just not telling the truth. Maybe they're stupid, but I've talked to some of these people, and I believe that some of them know exactly what they're doing. I was very involved with the AIDS epidemic for many years and trying to use the standard public health techniques necessary to control the disease. And after going to the Centers for Disease Control and spending 3 or 4 days there, I came away totally disillusioned, realizing that there's some really evil people there who knew exactly what they were doing. Well, Chris, tell us, what has been the response to your film? I know you showed it here in Santa Cruz on the at the Nickelodeon. Is this getting exposure across America?
Yes, it's just been, the response has been amazing. I'm overwhelmed. So, you know, we get love mail every day for people saying thank you. You know, the people who've had chronic Lyme, a lot of them can't watch the film the first time. They run out crying because it brings them back to their darkest times with the disease. But then they'll come back and watch it like 3 or 4 or 5 times, and the first thing they'll do is get a copy of it and show it to their relatives, because it really explains the suffering they've had to deal with the disease, and then the healthcare system that's broken. And, you know, it's not just Lyme. It's a lot of other diseases, but it explains to their loved ones what they've been going through. And then now that it's in theaters, people who don't know anything about Lyme are going to see it, and it's really interesting to see their responses. You know, they get really angry because they have no idea that this has been going on.
Well, that's our job, is to get the information out and try to get people thinking. And fortunately, we do have a fairly good listening audience across America, and we multiply our efforts with the videos, because we don't have a video on Lyme disease. So that's one reason why I'm just so pleased to learn that you have this. And you think that, what, a couple of months it'll be available on DVD?
Yes, I do. And I think the way it's really been used, before we were in theatrical, the way it was used is people holding community screenings to educate their friends and neighbors, and trying to drag other physicians there. Because, I mean, I have to say, I'm of the same opinion you are about the CDC. I started out thinking, I realized CDC was saying all the wrong things about the disease, and I started thinking that they were just, like, dim-witted bureaucrats. But after the 4 years of research, I really do think they know the size of the epidemic. I think one thing that really, well, first of all, the disease is growing at a tremendous rate. Like between 2006 and 2007, it went up 37%. If any other disease in the U.S. went up that much, it would be on the cover of every major newspaper, but there's been nothing. And part of it's because they're not showing the real numbers. The tests are super bad. They don't, you know, and they don't count cases unless these people really are super sick.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Chris Newby we're talking about. You know, suddenly, you know,
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protection of thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Megaplex theaters go for more like things like Transformers, so the mass market films. So we have a really good independent distributor, Shadow Distribution in Maine, so we're just encouraging people who want to have it shown in their town to contact us at info@underourskin.com, you know, and encourage their local theaters to run it there, because usually these indie film theaters will run films if the locals suggest it, because and certain areas have more of a line problem than others. For example, where you're from in Santa Cruz, I think areas of the Santa Cruz Hills have a problem as a line problem as big as Lyme, Connecticut, really.
Well, the thing, I can remember when we first got our first case of Lyme here at Sydney, probably, the early 1980s, we started getting some cases of Lyme in this area, but it was very, very rare. There were only a few cases here, but as time has gone by, of course, this thing has spread, and really it's a major problem in Santa Cruz, but it's a major problem really all over our country, isn't it? It's perhaps more intense in some areas than in others, but hasn't this simply spread all across the country?
It has, and it's sort of a mystery why, because, I mean, as a child in the 70s, I was outside every day, and I don't remember ever getting any tick bites in Virginia or getting sick. So, I mean, there is the question, why did it all of a sudden become very virulent in the 70s, and that's why people do talk about the Plum Island theory, you know, because Plum Island did, I mean, it's documented they had a tick hatchery on the Plum Island bioweapons facility, and they raised hundreds of thousands of ticks there and mosquitoes, and they experimented with putting different pathogens in different bugs and how readily it spread to animals. So very easily could have spread to the mainland.
Well, I think from your point of view, you're probably very wise not to get into the etiology, not to get into the source, to leave that to radicals like me who are out here on the airwaves trying to get people to think. But the important thing is there's got to be the good guy, the bad guy, and you're obviously the good guy in this scenario. The good cop, bad cop, but what we need is to get people to understand there is a very real problem. It's not imaginary. And I know a number of people in this community who've contracted this disease and been totally disabled by it. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like, of course, to give us a call, like to talk to Chris Newby about, of course, her work, her experience, about these Lyme support groups which are springing up all across America. And there really are a few doctors out there. They call them the Lyme literate doctors who have taken this on as a specialty. They work a little sub rosa. They're doctors who are dedicated to taking care of people, and they're looking over their shoulder because they're afraid that the medical board is going to come down on them because they're committing an unpardonable sin. They're curing people with a disease that the government says doesn't exist. And after all, we know those people in the government are there. They're there to help us. Well, if you believe that, why, you're incredibly naive, ladies and gentlemen. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. I want you to get out your email. I want you to get out your website and repeat it slowly twice.
Okay, so it's under our www.underourskin.com. And then if you want to get information about getting the film to your town, it's info@underourskin.com.
info@underourskin.com. And right now, of course, we've got Chris on the line. Chris Sidney lives here in the Santa Cruz area, and he was the one who put me in touch with you. I believe he is a victim of this terrible disease. Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I was wondering if Chris could talk a bit more about what does happen with doctors who are Lyme specialists, so people can understand the conflict that's going on in the medical community and why it's hard to find doctors who will treat Lyme. And then on a second topic, if she could talk a bit more about how widespread some of the other tick-borne diseases are.
All right.
I was going to just bring up that in our support group in Santa Cruz, in the meeting last week, 5 out of 8 people were infected with Babesia, had tested positive for Babesia.
And this is another one of the chronic infections. They find the ticks. Hold that. We'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Chris Newby. We're talking about Lyme disease, a chronic infection, spirochetal, but many of the people are also infected with a number of other parallel organizations, another chronic infectious organizations, and we'll be back in just a moment to pick up some of the answer to the questions that Chris from Santa Cruz had put forward. And this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Chris Newby. And Chris from Santa Cruz is calling. He asked, of course, what happens to doctors who actually treat this disease? Why are doctors, you know, who are dedicated, and I believe as a physician myself, most doctors are totally dedicated to helping people. Why are so many doctors reluctant to treat this disease?
Well, as we covered in our film, that the doctors who have been treating Lyme patients with long-term antibiotics have found themselves under fire by the insurance companies and by a large medical society called the Infectious Diseases Society of America. This group, who wrote a set of guidelines in 2006, said that for all Lyme patients, 2 to 4 weeks of antibiotics cure them, and if they're not cured by then they have psychological problems or have something called post-Lyme syndrome, and they need to be given antidepressants or anti-inflammatories. So this powerful medical society is allied with insurance companies and the makers of the vaccine. So they have defined the disease very narrowly and have come down very hard on this 2 to 4 weeks cures Lyme. The frontline physicians in the field are finding that when the disease is in the chronic form, it takes many more weeks of antibiotics, sometimes even years.
Taking them intravenously or orally?
Some people can be cured with long-term oral. Some people who have the serious neurological disease have to have intravenous, because that's the only way you can bypass the liver and get into the brain. So the insurance companies and the IDSA have been turning doctors into medical boards who treat with long-term antibiotics, because they say the antibiotics are dangerous, and they want to save. They don't want to breed super germs, and they want to save the antibiotics for pandemics or whatever. So the IDSA has sort of created a hostile environment where doctors now are afraid to treat with long-term antibiotics. They don't want to lose their medical licenses. In our film, two of the most effective and knowledgeable Lyme doctors actually lose their licenses just for doing what they think is best for their patients.
And what a tragic situation that is. And certainly, I think here in California, though, is that as much of a problem in California as it is in other parts of the country?
California has stronger laws to protect alternative doctors, and there is a second set of medical guidelines for Lyme that's from a different group called ILADS. And so in California, you have to tell a patient, okay, there's two ways you can treat Lyme: the 2 to 4 weeks or the longer term. So a patient has a right to choose here, and the doctors can do that without too much risk.
And of course, as much as I would criticize some of the things our state legislature has done, at least, of course, some of the very liberal Democrats there have actually come up with protection for doctors who are trying to do what's right, whereas the Republicans there are going to back the position taken by the CMA. And remember, I worked within the CMA for a decade, and I will tell you that there are people at the highest levels of the CMA there who are there to betray the doctors and betray the patients, and that's one reason I quit medicine and quit my medical practice. I really didn't want to have to put up with it, and of course I was making such a spectacle of myself. They tried to bribe me. They tried everything they could to silence me, and I decided maybe I would do four more good by contacting the public and trying to get them involved in this battle for the health of the American people. Chris, did you have another question?
Well, I was wondering if Chris could, again, just to help people understand how controversial some of these things are between different groups of doctors, the naysayers who claim chronic Lyme is all in your head, and the group that are attempting to help Lyme sufferers. And if she could talk on two other things. One is if she has any numbers on how many doctors have lost their licenses, and two, if you can describe the situation in Connecticut where the Attorney General went after the naysayer doctors, and I'll listen on the air. Thanks. Bye.
So I have a list of 50 Lyme doctors who have been under fire since about 1993. So there are enough high-profile cases that it has a chilling effect on other doctors, you know, when it's in the newspaper. So So Connecticut, of course, is very hard hit by Lyme disease, and it's also the insurance capital of the country. So you already have somewhat of a contentious situation. And, you know, late-stage Lyme treatment is really, really expensive. It can be $50,000, $60,000 a year in IV antibiotics. So the insurance companies are fighting back. And you know, they have a lot of allies in the government. But anyways, the Richard Blumenthal, the Attorney General of Connecticut, was just getting disgusted at how industry and commercial interests was controlling Lyme treatment, because it is so costly to his state in manpower and health care costs. So he started an investigation with the Infectious Diseases Society of America, the IDSA, into the people who wrote these guidelines. And what he found is like 12 of the 14 people who wrote these Lyme guidelines had commercial interests in that they could profit from the treatments or lack of treatments they recommended. And they were you know, on insurance payrolls and making money from the test kits that weren't particularly reliable and that they made money on. So he investigated them and forced them to settle, and their agreement was in 2007 they would rewrite the guidelines or relook at them with an unbiased panel. So that's going to happen actually in a week on July 30th. If you go to idsociety.org, you can watch this evidence hearing where the Lyme doctors and patient representatives will present their side of the Lyme evidence story, and the IDSA members will present their side, and hopefully this panel will come to the right conclusion and rewrite the guidelines in a less rigid and more inclusive manner.
Well, I think, Chris, I hate to say this, but I've been in organized medicine. I've seen how it works, and believe me, they'll appoint a panel, and they'll pack that panel so you don't stand a chance, and so the truth will not come out. And I fought that system of corruption within organized medicine for a decade and finally said, there's no way I can beat it. I had the doctors, after 10 years, I had the House of Delegates of the American, of the California Medical Association on my side. I got a standing ovation from them. We were going to treat the AIDS epidemic as an infectious disease and try to stop its spread, and the hierarchy of organized medicine appointed a panel to reevaluate what the doctors had said and decided that we needed more studies and more studies and more studies. And that was, I quit about 1994, and 16 years later, 15 years later, people are still dying unnecessarily all across America, all across the world of this AIDS epidemic, which is in some respects very, very similar to Lyme disease. Well, we had Chris from Michigan. We lost Chris from Michigan. If you'd like to call back, we'd be glad to talk to him. Or if you're out there across America, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, or if Chris from Michigan wants to call back, we'd be glad to talk to him. But I think this is such an important subject, and we're talking close to 2 million people out there across America. Some of them really don't have much idea of what's going on with them, but there are Lyme support groups all across our country, aren't there, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Internet has been a very empowering thing. It's just sort of like with AIDS patient rights, AIDS made big progresses once the antivirals got strong enough that patients lived long enough to organize. And I think with Lyme, the Internet has really helped, because all of a sudden people who were being abandoned and thought they were the only ones, you know, they have a support group now, and they're getting organized. So, I mean, the group that we're allied with is Turn the Corner Foundation, and they have a very helpful website to help people find Lyme doctors. For a nice online chat group, I like LymeNet.org. They're open 24/7. You know, if you want to get, you know, support for the rough symptoms you're going through or advice on how to get doctors. California has an excellent foundation called CALDA, California Lyme Disease Association. They have a lot of helpful information for getting insurance coverage, for educating schools, for example, with kids field trips, you know, to educate kids, okay, this is how to do a tick check. If you have these symptoms, you might have Lyme, that sort of thing.
Well, of course, the Internet really is wonderful. It's given people an opportunity to network with other people who have this disease and to realize, of course, that there really are millions of people out there with this chronic disease, and there is hope with long-term antibiotic therapy. Are you using doxycycline? What are you using?
Well, I'm off right now.
What did you use?
To go back to Chris from Santa Cruz's question, Lyme is like, once you get Lyme, it suppresses your immune system, and if there are any other infections in the tick, they attack you more severely. So it depends on what co-infections you have. Usually they start out with Zithromax because that kills a co-infection called Ehrlichia, and Ehrlichia can be pretty serious and kill people. The symptoms for Ehrlichia are swollen lymph nodes and certain kinds of rashes. Babesia, the main symptoms for that are night sweats, drenching night sweats, weird temperature regulation things, sometimes heart pains. And for babesia, you have to use a different kind of antibiotic called antimalarials, actually, like quinine or Mepron or Malarone. And so, anyways, that's why you really have to go to a skilled Lyme doctor, because there are combinations of antibiotics you use in a certain order so that you kill the bugs in the right order and also kill them in sort of a gentle way, because if you were to kill all the bugs all at once, it would be pretty toxic to your body. Detox is really important along the way.
And, of course, you've got to get your immune system built back up again so that because you need the help of the immune system along with the antibiotics to help deal with this infection, and the infection lowers your immune system. So it's sort of a vicious cycle. And, of course, but how does the average individual afford this? Because, you know, you obviously were able to come up with the $60,000, and you and your husband were able to get through this. Isn't this a terrible financial drain on a lot of people?
Well, it is. And, I mean, when I say $60,000, that's how much it cost the medical system. We had pretty good insurance, so a lot of that was covered. But we've heard... While we're doing the film, we've heard a lot of horror stories of people saying, oh, our whole family has Lyme. We sold our last couch so we could afford drugs for another month. So it is really hard, because all the insurance companies just adopted the IDSA guidelines that say 2 to 4 weeks cure Lyme, and then you're on your own. I mean, but I've heard people... You know, they send their housekeeper to Mexico to buy a year's worth of antibiotics and put it in a suitcase and bring it up. Or, you know, they fly to Mexico to get antibiotics at one of those IV clinics, or they go to India for stem cells. You know, it's just, it's really a weird situation that we have sick people and they have to leave the country to get treatment. If I had chronic acne, I could go to a dermatologist and take doxycycline every day. But if I have this serious neurological disease, my insurance company is cutting me off of antibiotics after a month. It sort of doesn't make sense.
Well, it doesn't make sense. But if you think that when we're going to get Obamacare in, that they're going to treat it any differently, why, basically this whole thing is designed to ration access to health care. And unfortunately, why, we're going to have to do something to try to get the physicians to understand that they're not getting the truth. And certainly there would be a real incentive on the part of the insurance companies to work with doctors that say this entity doesn't exist. It's all in your head. And, of course, this is what they tell the people with chronic fatigue and it's fibromyalgia. Have you looked at all into the similarities between chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and Lyme disease, and do they overlap?
You know, the experts I've talked to think there is a lot of overlap. First of all, let me talk about fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia was invented pretty much, a syndrome invented, I think, to explain symptoms of late-stage Lyme that weren't covered by the founders, the vaccine inventors for Lyme, mostly Dr. Alan Stier. He defined Lyme very narrowly so his vaccine trial would look good on paper. And he had to invent another disease to, like, throw all these people that weren't, that had this neurological form of the disease and give them a label. So, you know, the experts I've talked to said, well, they think maybe 80% of fibromyalgia is really Lyme. Chronic fatigue, I mean, I do think a lot of chronic fatigue is some viral origin. You know, I've talked to some of the people in the original Incline Village outbreak, and they do think it was some sort of virus that spread there for a variety of reasons. But I think a lot of people with late-stage Lyme are put in the chronic fatigue bucket.
Are some of those people from the for those people who don't know anything about Incline Village, it was really at Incline Village that the first cases of chronic fatigue syndrome were identified, and they were all teachers in the school, weren't most of them?
There was a school there, and you know, there are some theories that there was some government experiment gone bad there, because a huge number of people at the school got the same outbreak, and the CDC flew out there, and they just they sort of got the disease all wrong, and they were very skeptical that there was a real disease there. They somehow thought it was some town-wide hysteria. So, I think a lot about what's wrong with the CDC right now, and I think they're very much focused on diseases that kill people, and they're not very good at diseases that disable people. So, you know, we do have sort of a surveillance gap in our country where we're good at diseases that kill you, but not very good at diagnosing and quantifying disease, you know, these long-term chronic diseases.
And, of course, we've got really literally millions of people across America with one of these, disease, Lyme disease, chronic fatigues, fibromyalgia, Gulf War illness, a myriad of these diseases, and they go from doctor to doctor. And the doctor, meaning well, says, well, what you need is something. You've got to be chronically depressed because none of my tests show much of anything, and I know I've been there, but... These are very real and disabling entities. We'll be right back. Well, Chris, we've got three minutes for you to wrap.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Book that he's written on autism and certainly Lyme disease, because many of the children born to women who are infected with Lyme disease, these children will become autistic, at least a certain number of them. There's much we don't know about this disease, but the one thing we do know is there's been a conscious effort to cover up the existence of chronic Lyme disease. So you need to get the information. You need to help us get it out across America. We do, of course, have a four-tape set on chronic fatigue syndrome. We have a book on emerging viruses. It's called Emerging Viruses, AIDS, Ebola, and Other Diseases, going into how these diseases were actually created in the laboratory, written by Lynn Horowitz. It's an excellent book. We have, of course, my four-tape set on AIDS, the unnecessary epidemic, AIDS, and we carry, of course, Don Scott's excellent book on the origin of AIDS, which, of course, I'm firmly convinced came out of the laboratory. It's entitled AIDS, the Crime Against Civilization. AIDS, the Crime Against Civilization. Why would anybody in their right mind want to release a horrible disease? Well, very simply, because there are people who believe in population control, and most of the figures you're getting out of Africa today are simply not true. This is one of the most devastating diseases there's ever been. Certainly in South Africa, why 40% of the adult population are infected and they're dying so rapidly they can't keep up with them. The same is happening in Zimbabwe and Zambia, those areas where the experimental hepatitis B vaccine was initially used. We actually, of course, have the articles that point out that 77% of the homosexuals who foolishly took an experimental hepatitis B vaccine came down with HIV disease. Isn't that a coincidence? And most of them died. The vaccine was given in 76, 77, 78. That was an experimental hepatitis B vaccine. The same that was given in Africa, in South Africa, in Zimbabwe, in Zambia. And the parts of Africa where they have hardly any of the disease, there are 8 different subtypes of HIV disease. How could you possibly get 8 different subtypes of a disease all over the world at the same time? Well, that of course gets you into my articles. You can go to my website, read up on my material on vaccines, on genetic engineering, and on population control. There really are people out there who have a different world view. And unfortunately, why, of course, we are under attack today. Population control is the major thrust of the American State Department. If you don't believe it, you need to read the top secret report, now declassified, called National Security Study Memorandum 200. It is available through Radio Liberty. National Security Study Memorandum 200 is about a couple hundred pages, came out over the name of Henry Kissinger back in 1974. But the last thing they want the American people to know is we are creating new diseases. Some of them are race-specific. My goodness, if we want to talk about racism, this is the ultimate in racism, to design diseases that will kill certain specific races. If you doubt that, this is a program. You can go to the New American Century.org. That's the Project for the New American website, and pull down their article on rebuilding America's defenses, or certainly got my go to my articles on the Project for the New American Century, and we give you the next page in that report on rebuilding America's defenses, where they talk about how they're going to be able to create diseases for certain specific races. And isn't it interesting that almost half the cases of AIDS today in America are in blacks? Please pray for Radio Liberty.